Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's show by going to ustream.tv and searching for Gary Null. You can also listen over the telephone, and I can't tell you how many millions upon millions of minutes, over 10 million minutes, listened by people over the telephone. In fact, of the 2,500 radio stations, this is the number one program where people listen over the telephone. And you never know when you're going to be traveling, or you're in a cab or driving a truck on a vacation, and you want to hear the show. If it's this time of day, just go to this phone number, 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. How many people are listening over the telephone? More people than watch Al Jazeera America in a 24-hour period. That's a lot of people. Today, we have quite a show. Of course, the latest on health and nutrition, eating red. Well, that's important. What does that mean? We're going to celebrate eating red today. We're also going to examine why soft drinks, sugary soft drinks, can increase your risk of pain if you're a man in particular. We don't think twice about taking plastic bottles into the sun. Athletes do it. People on picnics do it. What happens when that plastic bottle, let's say a bottle of water or a soft drink, when it heats up? I'll let you know. And then think of all the millions, hundreds of millions of bottles of water have been sent to the troops in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and in Africa, and what it could be doing to them. You'll get a different perspective. Also today, we're going to explore the most unlikely new medicine, pickled cabbage. New research shows how it can alleviate allergies, coughs, colds, and more. Now, those of you who listen every day know that this all comes from mainstream peer-reviewed science, always with citations. And then we go to our environmental segment. Today, the latest emissions study shows that gas hydrofracking is 1,000 times higher than the Environmental Protection Agency estimate. Now, why is that important? Because in every small community where they're trying to come in and say, we're going to buy your land or lease it, and you're going to make money. And for the local community, there'll be new jobs and a revenue stream. Well, to hard-hit communities, that's very inviting. What about pollution? Well, we have an EPA report here, and it's not bad at all. And then hydrofracking goes in, and then a few months later, you can't drink the water. You take a shower, and you get burns on your body. Your animals get sick and die. You can't even walk out around your house frequently without a protective mask on. Well, how is it that that's all within the EPA standards? The EPA was wrong. Now, here's the key. Was it intentionally wrong because of politics, or was it simply not aware of the facts? We'll go into that. One more reason why. When the President of the United States says, you know, we need the pipeline going from the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, down to the Gulf of Mexico, no, we do not. But now all of his figures and the State Department's figures under Clinton and Kerry are wrong by 1,000 times. We'll also take a look at a few of the commentaries on social issues that are not being addressed. Today, a discussion on the student loan program. And in my opinion, it is not about helping students or borrowers. It's about making profits for the federal government. Lauren McCauley from Common Dreams. I counsel hundreds of individuals, mainly war veterans, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. I support them. I've even built a veterans village where they can come and be rehabilitated without cost to them at all. I've created protocols to help them to the best that we can get rid of the toxins they've been exposed to, including the experimental vaccines and depleted uranium. The government said none of these were harmful. The government lies. And these people are the victims. Today, from C.J. Roman from Alternet, our soldiers' trauma from U.S. wars has endangered the American public. But you really have to know the statistics. What is the likelihood of a veteran committing an act against their own family members or against society when they come back having experienced the trauma of war? And we're fortunate today because in studio in New York City, Dr. Christopher Baer, a psychologist and psychoanalyst who has become well known as the Wall Street psychologist, 30 years spent training financial executives, CEOs, venture capitalists, hedge fund execs, traders, Wall Street lawyers, their families, in the securities and banking industry, is going to give his impact of what he sees on the psychopathology of our oligarchical elite and its detrimental effects upon the 99%, but I'll also be asking him, why is it that the people like Dick Cheney and George Bush and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, the people who never had to engage an enemy, never had to see their buddies blown up, never had to carry people back in body bags, never had to know whether or not they should shoot or not shoot. What does that do to them when you've trained them to kill, but no one's there to decommission the emotions, to turn off the DNA from the epigenetics of conflict and not knowing who the enemy is, to one where you're back home? The people who are so quick to say that someone else should go fight for them, I consider them all cowards. All of them. I make no exception. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Dick Cheney, all of these people. These, in my opinion, are the people who do not deserve the respect they've been given nor the power. So how come they have this power? How come they could all run today, with the exception of George Bush, and get elected again? How is it that Bill Clinton could be the most popular ex-president alive today? How is that possible? That tells me that it's not the 1% that are psychopathic in a vacuum. It shows our entire society is grossly dysfunctional. We'll deal with that. And he's here, and we'll have a lively discussion on it. If time permits, a commentary. When I read the papers in New York, which I try not to do because it's like reading the New York papers is like looking into a toilet bowl after a football stadium bathroom is filled overflowed and trying to find the clean toilet paper. I can't find any. The biases are palpable. The omissions are just, to me, sinful. So they're either pro-privatization, pro-charter schools, and they don't even make good arguments when they're against it. Today, school privatization and the charter school scam, corporate America's neo-feudal assault on education. As you see, we have a lot to cover, plus one final thing, and I'll get to this early. Do you remember when I was talking about why we should not go into Libya? Go back and listen to that archive show. I laid out 3 points. One, that as bad as Gaddafi was, what would be worse is what would happen in his absence. First, the people who'd want this conflict have an ulterior motive, and it has nothing to do with bringing democracy to the people. If you want to bring democracy to the people in the Middle East, why don't you start by one of the most misogynist, hate-filled, corrupt regimes in history, the Saudi Arabians? Everything they do wrong. They butcher, abuse, stone, amputate, kill women with impunity. Never a word out of anyone in the United States, especially the dim-witted neocons, and that's all they are. Because someone can make a profit, they become our friend. We overlook all their sins and omissions. But instead, we go into Libya. No declaration of war, but we were behind it, supported it, and funded it. It was our weapons. So then we get a blowback, because now you have 2,000 tribes all vying for power. And within that, you unleash Al-Qaeda, you unleash the Islamic extremists, and they took advantage of the vacuum, and now there is no government, there is no civility. And I'll tell you about how bad it is in Libya today if you're just a woman wanting to go out in the street to buy some food or send your kid to school. No one has taken responsibility for the consequences of that misadventure. But it's there. We will. Let's begin. I believe that we have to start somewhere in our journey of health. For a lot of you, you're already well along in your journey. Good for you. For others, you're just starting. Probably 95% of this audience is not fully engaged in health, but you do some things. I'm interested in having the day come when you do a lot more so you can help prevent disease and be more proactive about health. One thing we can all do is we can eat red, because eating red means that we're going to take in the polyphenols, the phytonutrients, the antioxidants that help prevent the DNA from being damaged with free radicals, but also help heal the DNA. That's one of the wonderful things about berries. They can prevent free radical damage. They can heal what has happened with free radical damage. They actually rejuvenate you. When we look at the red, and this is something that the American Heart Health Month told us, we should be looking at why we should eat. And they're talking about the pigments. Quote, "The pigment that makes up the red color in many fruits and vegetables like tart cherries and tomatoes are powerful disease-fighting antioxidants that may help reduce the inflammation associated with atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries and reduce certain risk factors for heart disease. A recent study from the University of Michigan revealed that cherry-enriched diets in animals lowered total cholesterol levels, reduced triglycerides, which are fatty acids, reduced major risk factors for heart disease. Well, with 80 million Americans living every day with some form of heart disease, and most people are not aware of that statistic, 80 million. That's a lot. That's a little under one-third of the American population. I'm talking about adults. So when one out of every three adults has got heart disease, then suddenly it's important. Quote, "We've always known fruits and vegetables were healthy, but now we're beginning to better understand precisely why," says Dr. Rowling, cardiac surgeon at the University of Michigan Cardiovascular Center. And dried cherries are certified by the American Heart Association, and they're also beneficial. Well, dried cherries are great because they're not seasonal. You can eat them at any time, put them in a bag, take them with you, and just eat maybe 2 tablespoons twice a day of dark cherries. But how about cranberries? Dried cranberries are available, again, all year. Fresh cranberries come out in the late summer and fall. It's always good to have the concentrate. I much prefer the concentrate over the juice, because when you're concentrating, what you're doing is you're taking the juice and you're wicking out about 30 to 50% of the water. That means you have more of the actual proanthocyanidins necessary. And why cranberries? Because cranberries can help protect your endothelium, which is the lining of your arteries. It can help allow the bacteria that would otherwise attach to your bladder and cause some form of bladder infection. It helps flush that bacteria out of the system. So a cup of cranberries or cranberry juice each day can help keep your bladder healthier. You also have to look at red currants. Red currants are just dynamite in antioxidants. They're a little tart, but throw them into a smoothie. And red grapes, they're also great, especially the grape skin. And the cherry also is loaded with melatonin, which helps improve your body's natural sleep patterns and helps with jet lag and helps you to overcome pain in your joints. So, one more reason to eat red. One thing we should not be eating or drinking is all the sugar that we consume. I remember once on PBS in Washington, D.C., I wanted to show the audience how much sugar an average 12-year-old consumes in a day. Now, what the audience did not know is earlier in the day, David Slater, my in-house counsel, took sugar based upon the government's own statistics and measured them onto a scale, electronic scale. And then he poured that into a bag and sealed the bag, and that's what I took to Washington with me. So I'm standing there talking, and I'm saying, now this is how much sugar we consume in a day. I just kept pouring out, and teaspoon after teaspoon. I'm doing a whole monologue while I'm doing this. And after this, the phones just lit up like crazy in the studio at PBS because people wanted to know, what can I do? After the program, the station manager came over and says, great job, Gary. I'm going to replay the show probably 8 times over the next 2 weeks. And by the way, you broke a record tonight on an off night, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Most money we've ever made. Okay, thanks. And then about a half hour later, when I was ready to leave and come back to New York City, he came over. So I got some bad news. I said, what? He said, I just got a call from the head of the local station board, and who said, don't have Gary Null back on again. You know, why? Because she got a call from the Sugar Association saying that my information was not correct. I was scaring people. I said, well, I understated it, but I'll provide all the information that you need. He said, you don't understand. This is PBS. We don't care about facts. It's who gives us the check, and she's Sharon Rockefeller. Her husband's Jay Rockefeller, and she sits on the board of Pepsi-Cola, one of the largest users of sugar, so you understand the political consequences. I can't go against her. I wished I could, but I can't. I said, I understand. I don't blame you. Not a problem. Well, the next day, we wrote a blistering letter to every member of PBS's national board, to every member of the local station board, specifically to Sharon Rockefeller. I called her out. I asked her to come on national television to debate me. I wrote a letter to the Sugar Association. I asked them to come on national television and debate me, but neither would. And I said, you have the power to keep the truth away. But then again, that's what PBS frequently does, especially at the national level. I said, but to those who know the truth, you no longer have power over them. So for everyone who watched that show last night, they will not be allowing their children to consume the amount of sugar that they had in the past. And that may save a kid from becoming a victim of adult diabetes, which is now an epidemic in young people and teenagers, heart disease, arthritis that we have never seen in the American youth and teenage population. You don't have adult arthritis in teenagers. Now we do. So interesting how what I've done then, because when someone challenges me, when truth is involved, I'm going to get right in their face. I'm not a coward. I'm not going to back off from anyone. I don't care who they are and how powerful they are and rich they are, because at the end of the day, sooner or later, the truth will emerge. Maybe not immediately, because power and control of the media and having all these little groups that can go out and demonize you on Facebook and other places, they control that. But they don't control what happens when the public has a chance to see two sides of an issue. And that's why they've kept Ralph Nader or Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson or third-party candidates from ever having a forum. Because if you ever, ever had any of these people in a national debate against these blithering idiots that run for public office, you would be embarrassed to call yourself a Democrat, which you should anyhow. If you're a corporate Democrat, and most power players are corporate Democrats, and we all know that. The left has been embarrassed by these people for a long time, but then again, they exclude any authentic liberals, authentic Democrats, just as the right has excluded authentic conservatives. And by the way, if people ever stop long enough to actually talk about what's in their common interest, they would find many people have many things in common if they're not corporatized in their ideology. I mean, we all want peace. We want quality of life. We want opportunity. We want to live harmoniously. We don't want to assault nature. We don't want to assault cultures. We want respect for each person's right to have their religion or sexual preference or philosophy. That's what people who actually have authentic perspectives have. The moment you corporatize it, then all you're doing is acting like a mouthpiece for those who are behind the scenes. And those people will never debate. Those people would be cowards. They are cowards. They're sociopaths. They let someone else do their fighting for them. But they control it. Make no bones about it. You will never see the Koch brothers. You will never see George Soros. You will never see these people stand up where they have someone who could present an issue to undermine their perspective and their position. In any case, beside the point. So I consider sugar to be poison. I consider the way we consume sugar to be so deadly that if we were really interested in people's health, we would ban it. But we don't. We encourage it. But then again, we encourage all the things that are unhealthy. Just look at the ads on television. Now, unless I miss something, I have yet to see a healthy ad on television, something that actually promotes health. I see everything that promotes either stress or disease. You know, drink your beer, it's Sunday. Eat your fries, eat your sugar, eat your snack. Don't eat at home with your family. That's un-American today. That's not hip. Instead, rush into a fast food meal in a sterile environment, agitating with its colors and its music to get you to get in there fast and get out fast. Don't think slow. Slow food, slow conversation, slow anything. Get it fast. And then gobble it down, a pound of it, clog your arteries, inflame your joints, inflame your brain, hurt your heart, hurt your pancreas, rot your teeth, bleed your gums, spoil your breath, constipate your intestine, and then say, I got to go back tomorrow. I just got to get another fix. That's what's promoted. And then we wonder, why are we so unhappy and sick? So sugar is at the top of my list of things that we should get out of our system. This is the latest from Science Daily. Ah, this is coming from the heart of orthodoxy. Here's what it says. I'll quote this. And this is, quote, consumption of sugar sweetened soft drinks and fructose is strongly associated with an increased risk of gout in men. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal, the British Medical Journal. Now, gout is a joint disease which causes extreme pain and swelling. It is most common in men age 40 and older. It is caused by excess uric acid in the blood, which leads to uric acid crystals collecting around the joints. And in the United States, levels of gout have doubled over the last few decades, which coincides with substantial increase in the consumption of soft drinks and fructose, which is a simple sugar and the only carbohydrate known to increase uric acid levels. Now, conventional dietary recommendations for gout have focused on the restriction of purines, which are found in meats and meat products, and especially liver and kidneys, and alcohol, and also in sweetened soft drinks. So researchers in the United States and Canada examined the relationship between the intake of sugar, sweetened soft drinks, and fructose, and the risk of gout. The study's lead author, Dr. Sheila from the University of Washington, said, quote, the bottom line is that these chemicals likely do exist in products that were commonly used in our children, and they potentially cause health effects, end quote. So that's what we have. And yet the FDA, which is fully is controlled by special interests, and the CDC, even more so, do nothing whatsoever to protect the public. And finally, before you take that plastic bottle and heat it, including a baby bottle, which you heat before you give the baby, consider this. This is from Amanda Gardner, Health Day Reporter. Exposing plastic bottles to boiling water can release a potentially harmful chemical 5,500% faster than normal. Now, you've heard me talk about BPA, biphenyl A. It's found in the plastics that make up water bottles, baby bottles, and other food and drink packaging. It acts as an environmental estrogen and can disrupt the function of the endocrine system. a center, U.S. Center for Evaluation of Risks to Human Reproduction, concluded that the exposure of BPA presents some risks to development and reproduction. So now we're finding in the journal Toxicology Letters that it mimics the female sex hormone, estradiol, and the fear has been that exposure to BPA can cause birth defects and developmental problems. In addition, exposure to BPA has been blamed for a variety of other problems, including cancer, diabetes, obesity, and attention deficit disorder. And previous studies have found that repeatedly scrubbing, washing, and boiling polycarbonate baby bottles could cause them to even release more BPA. All the more reason to use glass. So now they're finding out when you heat that bottle, you're allowing more of that to get into whatever the liquid is that's inside. So don't use those bottles. I mentioned pickled being the new healthy item. I've always advocated and enjoyed sauerkraut. It gives you a lot of good probiotics. And pickles also. But most people would never think of sauerkraut and pickles as being good for you. But fermented foods, meaning left to age from anywhere from a few days to weeks before they're eaten, are really important. We saw it years ago in the first fermented drinks in the United States were called kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A, kind of a fizzy fermented tea that's been consumed for centuries in China. Now the science is there. Cambridge University researchers reported the regular consumption of fermented, low-fat dairy foods, such as yogurt and fromage and cottage cheese. I remember eating cottage cheese as a kid. Man, I did not like it at all. So my mom would put lemon juice and salt and pepper on it. Then it was tolerable, so I ate it quickly. But she said, it's good for you. And that was made from organic cottage cheese from McDonald's farm where my family spent a lot of time. And I trusted her, but also pickles and sauerkraut were all the time around. Well, what we now know is that fermentation stimulates bacteria that help improve your immunity, help you if you're suffering from colds, help you in the pre-digestion of good bacteria, so your food is better assimilated, and it releases lactic acid, a natural preservative, which acidifies the environment in the gut, and that stimulates the growth of even more good bacteria. So the more fermented foods you consume, the more natural probiotics your body is building. And we know that good bacteria in the body is so important. Sugar creates bad bacteria, alcohol, bad bacteria, meat, bad bacteria. But fermented foods, good bacteria. Remember, 70% of your immune system is in your gut. And fermented foods stimulate the bacteria that helps with immunity. So, to keep yourself healthy, make sure you're having fermented foods. And one nice thing to do is just put some sauerkraut into a salad. Or if you want something really tasty, what I do is I'll take some cabbage. And green cabbage is fine. And you steam it just to loosen it up, the lignocellulose, for about 5 minutes. And then put sauerkraut in there. And you have the leaf laid out. And you put a line of sauerkraut in the middle. And I like to put some fennel and anise in that. And then you can put brown rice around that. And then black beans on the outside of the brown rice, and then put some tomato on top of that, a little mustard on the tomato, and then you fold over your cabbage, put some toothpicks through it, and then you put that, the rice is already cooked, by the way, and the beans are already cooked, but then you heat that up and you can put a nice sauce on it. I might take oranges, a blood orange, and I'll throw a blood orange into a blender with a little virgin olive oil, a little coconut oil, and some rice milk, but the concentrated rice milk, and blend that. and with some cayenne pepper, Himalayan sea salt, and then I pour that, drizzle that over that. Now you have a wonderful dish. It's protein, fiber, probiotics in the sauerkraut, wonderful taste, something you wouldn't normally taste. So try that to get the good bacteria in your body. Remember, you have anywhere from 10 to 30 times more bacteria than you have cells. And these bacteria communicate with one another. So good bacteria, feeding them, the body has an innate knowledge that you're doing something good for it, and it responds accordingly. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. This is the latest study on hydrofracking, which we oppose. And it says, from Common Dreams, quote, study, fracking emissions up to 1,000 times higher than EPA estimates. New reports suggest highly potent greenhouse gas, far more prevalent in gas production than previously thought. From Jacob Chamberlain, staff writer, natural gas drilling is emitting far higher levels of methane into the atmosphere than federal regulators at the EPA have said, according to new findings, new study. Quote, we identified a significant regional flux of methane over a large area of shale gas wells in southwestern Pennsylvania in the Marcellus Formation and further identified several pads with high methane emissions. End quote. That was from the team at Purdue University and published in the peer-reviewed journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. That's our foremost scientific body in the United States. So, the EPA that has been on the side of the gas hydrofrackers, they're wrong. So please use this report at the level, at the state level, to say, no, you do not have the science to show that gas hydrofracking is safe for the environment. We have the study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science from Purdue University showing just the opposite. Also today, a brief commentary, but I think it's relevant, and then we'll take a break and go to our guest. This is from C.J. Werlerman from Alternet. We'll post it on our site today. And it's entitled, Our Soldiers' Trauma from U.S. Wars Has Endangered the American Public. I'll quote, Iraq War Veteran Special Ivan Lopez was dealing with depression and anxiety. On April 2nd, Lopez went to the 40th Transportation Battalion Administration Office at Fort Hood, Texas, where he requested a leave form so that he could attend to family matters. He was told that he would have to return later to retrieve it, which then sparked a verbal altercation between him and Sergeant Jonathan Westbrook and Sergeant First Class Daniel Ferguson. Within minutes of the dispute, Lopez returned with a .45 caliber pistol in a killing spree that would last 8 minutes. Filled with more than 35 rounds, Westbrook, Ferguson, and Timothy Owens would lay slain alongside 16 wounded before Lopez ended his own life with a bullet to his head. The shooting grabbed national headlines. The memorial for the dead was nationally televised with President Obama in attendance. The nationalistic pomp and ceremony of military memorials is not only orchestrated to purge the reality of war, but also to fool us into believing these tragic events are unique. They're not. They're all too familiar and now serve as a reminder that the American empire is in rapid decline. In small towns across America's heartland, local newspapers contain headlines with similar stories. Colorado Springs, Iraq war vets suspected in two slayings. Lakewood, Washington, family blames Iraq after son kills wife. Pierre, South Dakota, soldier charged with murder testifies about post-war stress. Las Vegas, Iraq veteran arrested in killing. The New York Times published a detailed report showing an explosion in the rate of military veterans who commit murder. The paper found Iraq and Afghan veterans had committed 121 instances of homicide on U.S. soil. 2 years later, Current TV explored the link between post-traumatic stress disorder among veterans of the two recent wars and violence after returning home. The documentary found that the trend had continued with another 43 veterans charged with murder in the same period of time. Another report showed that murder rate among the 3,500 members, the 4th Infantry Division, 4th Brigade Combat Team, based at the U.S. Army's Fort Carson, Colorado, was 1,140% the average of Colorado Springs. The New York Times report found that murders committed by active duty military personnel rose 89% from the pre-war period to present day. Of the 121 veterans who were charged with murder, 13 had committed suicide, which leads to the next alarming statistic. 22 veterans in this country are committing suicide every day. And how many suffer from anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder? In fact, more than 2,000 veterans committed suicide thus far this year in the United States. More sobering is the fact that more Vietnam War veterans committed suicide after the war than the 55,000 killed during it. Are you aware of that? Listen again. We had more than 55,000 vets who returned from the war who killed themselves. Where's their memorial? Where's the outrage? Where's the inquiry? Don't expect it from the military. They're incapable of ever being honest about anything. The purpose is not to stigmatize veterans. It is a reminder of what the corporate-led war machine does to young men and women and how our crumbling infrastructure and decaying state is unable to care for them when they return. I saw that firsthand when I stumbled upon a group of 16,000 vets living without electricity, toilets, water, food, nothing, shelter. They had nothing. I found men at 8 o'clock in the morning on a 40-degree morning, curled up with nothing more than a T-shirt on in a fetal position, trying to keep warm in right out of Titusville. But in the central area, there were 16,000. I filmed about 100 that day alone. Even the next day, when there was a stand down, which they happen each year where the vets go to get something, and I set up my camera and it was foggy and I couldn't hear anything. And so I turned to the camera operator and I said, "Are you sure we're in the right place?" He said, "Yeah, this is the address." And I couldn't see. I said, "Well, I don't see any lights. I don't see anything. And it's almost 7 o'clock and it's supposed to open at 7. Within the next 15 minutes, the fog began to rise, and there they were. They had been there for hours, a line that stretched for 2 miles. I didn't hear one word out of a single vet. They just walked silently in through this gate and got sleeping bags or shoes or box of food and a haircut. They could take a shower. And so I spoke with each and every one as they went in. "How long have you been in the woods? Why are you here?" And almost all of them had gone home after the war, had a home, had a family, had a job, but post-traumatic stress disorder and their inability to decommission the mindset of war caused them to be violent against their kids, their spouses. They lost their jobs, and they end up here. That, to me, was a tragedy. So I said, "Well, where is Sean Hannity? Where is Glenn Beck? Where is Bill Riley? Where is all these people who encourage our brave men and women when they go to war, but have nothing to say to you or about you when you exit war, unless you get your legs blown off, and then they're, you know, promoting some foundation that will help you with your rehabilitation? You all have full body, but you don't have full consciousness. You're injured." They said, "There is no one to help us. There's nothing to help us." And how many of you are? There's 55,000. I spoke with George Taylor. And it's just sad. It's tragic to me that this is what happens. So it's not about stigmatizing the vets. I'm against their wars. I'm not against them. I'm trying to help them. Jess Goodall, who served in the Marines Mortuary Division during the war in Iraq, published a memoir entitled "Shade It Black, Death and After in Iraq." Quote, "Our camis would be stained with blood or with brains," she writes. "Sometimes things come in with name tags, or sometimes one is Hispanic and you could tell who was Hispanic and who was the white guy. We tried separating flesh. It was ridiculous. We would open a body bag and there was nothing but vaporized flesh. There were not four hands or a whole leg in a bag. We tried to distribute the mush evenly throughout the bags. We had the last body bag come in. We opened up the body bag and it was filled with four heads. I looked at four before looking away. The eyes were looking back at me. We saw all the heads, the expressions of fright and horror. War is disgusting and horrific, and it never leaves the people who are involved in it. The war is never over for us. The fighting stops, the troops get called back, but the war goes on for those damaged by war. End quote. In conclusion, the wars fought in Iraq and Afghanistan were wars of occupation fought against insurgent forces. Psychiatrist Robert G. Lifton, who I've had on this program, says soldiers placed in this kind of environment are vulnerable to atrocity-producing situation. When soldiers perceive the enemy is all around them, unidentifiable from the civilian population, the soldier feels his life may be taken at any moment for any passerby. This stress only needs a spark to result in that soldier mistakenly or intentionally killing an innocent civilian. The military trains our professional killers to be emotionless operators, so they may execute missions and cope with the chaos and confusion of war in an emotionally detached manner. When these soldiers return home, the military does not give them an off button. The best care and assistance they can hope for is offered by what? The Veterans Administration? Veterans are being denied the care they need because the Republican Party continues to starve the federal government of the revenue it needs to provide social assistance programs like veterans benefits. That's that. Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. To have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. In a moment, we're going to go to our guest, Dr. Christopher Baer, and talk about the psychopathology of our oligarchical elite, corporate elite, government elite, all of them, and their spokespersons in the media, not just the right media, but the left media, MSNBC, even some Pacifica stations, the people who are there to do nothing more than be corporate mouthpieces. It's appalling. And we're going to talk about this. But before then, just two announcements. First of all, for those of you who attended our party last week to celebrate all the good energy that you gave to one of our sister stations, WBAI, in the last fund drive, those photographs and a video of you dancing and of you having a great time, and you'll notice there are people who are teenagers and people in their 80s, all races. You can go up on blog.garynoll.com and take a look at all that. Blog.garynoll.com, then look under photos or videos and you'll see it. Also, if anyone supported the BAI and their gift was to enjoy an evening with a gourmet vegan dinner and then a Broadway or off-Broadway show, and if you were not contacted, and we found one who wasn't, please let us know so we can make sure that you are given that opportunity. This way no one gets left out. I thought we had finished with that group, helping them. It was a wonderful experience, by the way. They got an evening out and Broadway, off-Broadway concert. We did it all. I went out about five or six nights with people. Wonderful group of people. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for supporting that station. Anyone missed it who supported and pledged, just 1-800-877-627-5065, and we'll get that corrected. And also what we're going to do, because a lot of people simply didn't have the money, understandable, but still wanted to celebrate and go out and enjoy an evening, so this Friday I'm going to take some people to an art film, a vegan meal and an art film. No money, you pay your own way. Should cost maybe $30, $40, but you'll call and speak with Jeremy, because there's a lot of good art films, and it's a way to socialize in a small group and enjoy a movie, conversation, art film, dessert. But this is just to honor the people in the audience who couldn't come because they didn't have the money to pay the big bucks to the station. It all went to the station. And this way, you don't have to pay anything to the station. It's just to let everyone who felt, gee whiz, I would enjoy doing it, now you have a chance. That'll be Friday. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Nice to have you with us, Christopher Bear.
Good to be here. Good afternoon.
A new study will be released in the forthcoming journal Perspectives in Politics by professors from Princeton and Northwestern universities that analyzed almost 1,800 of the wealthy elite over a 20-year period and found that our policymakers respond almost exclusively to the needs of the 90 wealth percentile at the exclusion of everyone else. Citizen groups barely register in their decision-making, and as we witness the policies coming out of Washington and the refusal of federal officials to hold Wall Street and corporate executives accountable for crimes and misdemeanors is evidence of the preferential treatment the corporatocracy and the banking industry are given over the needs of average citizens. And moreover, study after study shows that the oligarchical elite are deficient in qualities such as empathy, compassion, caring towards those outside their social and economic class. So I'd like for you to share your experiences and your observations about counseling numerous executives and high-level employees on Wall Street and in the investment community, and then put these findings into the broader perspective so we're not limited to Wall Street.
Wall Street is all about power, money, and control, and so is corporate America. It's the relentless pursuit of profit and power. The income disparity issue is a major one that I'm having a lot of trouble with. The top 1% of the population owns 43% of the assets in our country. What's happening is the underclass is taking over the middle class. How does a middle class family send their child to college? They can't. Private college tuition for 4 years is nearly $250,000. It's impossible, and the debt can never be paid off. College debt now has surpassed credit card debt. It's more than $1 trillion in our country. But it's an attitudinal thing at the highest corporate levels and for the rich. I've worked with a number of very wealthy people. I've met a dozen billionaires in my life. Some of them are oriented toward helping people, but many look at people, especially poor people, as subhuman, and they don't have regard for them. However, the poor and the middle class make up the lubricant of our economy. They're the consumer engine. Jobs and investment create an economy, and then consumers make it run, and that's disappearing. I frankly think we're on the brink of an economic holocaust, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. The average worker in New York City earns $40,000 a year. The average Wall Street worker earns $330,000 a year. At the peak, the average Goldman Sachs worker earned $700,000 a year. In corporate America, the average CEO earns 380 times what his average employee in his company makes. We're becoming imbalanced, and there's going to be a tipping point. And as poverty increases, it's going to create revolution, in my opinion. And there's going to be panic in the streets.
What percentage of Wall Street or corporate executives or governmental agents, because I consider them cut from the same cloth, because frequently when you're considered the best and brightest in your high school, the valedictorian, the number one in your class, and then you go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton or... then you're one of 2,000 best and brightest. and then you work hard to achieve. Then you get out of there, and then you go to Wall Street, you're one of 100,000. And then nationwide, you're one of 10 million. So you go from being the top person at the local level to just one more person having to work 20-hour days to prove your value by what you do, and the moral compass is completely stopped. You make choices based upon your need for security, and instead of what is good for the country, what is good for society, what is good for the earth. Those are all set aside. How often do you see that equation?
Very frequently, and it's malignant narcissism and power and defining your value by your portfolio size rather than by what you can do for other people, what you can even do for your family. And a lot of it's branding. The concept of the best and the brightest I find objectionable, and I think it's been oversold to people. I am a great believer in performance and accountability based on criterion behavior. I've developed a model to try to help the 700,000 black and Hispanic students in America who don't finish high school on time or at all. You have to, reading and writing is much less important to these kids than developing their skills, passions, and talents and integrating what they have into corporate America. For instance, a graffiti artist should be working with Apple and become a graphics artist, for instance. Kids who steal cars and bypass alarm systems can work for alarm companies and become electronic engineers. We have problems that we can't even imagine, and I'm a great believer and I have a passion for cost analysis. We will all pay for these failures ultimately. Our culture will, and we can't afford it, and that's another reason I think we're on the brink of an economic holocaust. And as the middle class is financially oppressed more and more, again, I think it's going to evaporate, and we're going to become a nation that will, and a culture that may disappear. Rome fell in 479 AD, and America can also. We're not invulnerable.
I would look at it slightly differently. I don't believe that we're going to disappear. I don't believe that our systems will collapse. What I believe is that there'll be a radical shift in protecting those who have the power, because those who have power also have power over policy, laws, and to determine what is a correct standard by which you should be accountable. Hence, they will have green zones, probably 1,000 or 2,000 green zones in the United States, that if you are living there, working in there, you'll never know there's a problem in the world. You have your restaurants, your operas, your plays. You'll have normal life. If you live outside of that green zone, which approximately 85% of the public will, then you're in a different standard. Now, the very principle that would allow someone to overachieve because they felt insecure and take advantage of every opportunity, irrespective of how much wealth they have, they clearly don't need more wealth. But there's something driving them to want that. I believe it'll work exactly the same way, but in a different perspective, when you have so many teenagers who are seeing their families thrown out on the street, and they're looking and to their mother or their mother and father or their brother and sister and saying, we have to live in a car, or maybe they don't have a car, we'll have to live in a shelter, or maybe there's no room in a shelter, we'll have to live on a park bench, or maybe there's no park bench because the 90 communities now are forbidding a person to even live in their car. They'll give you six months in jail and $1,000 fine if you're caught living in your car. So now what do you think they're going to do? They're going to say, I got to survive. I got to have my mother survive. They'll join gangs. And I believe we're going to see an exponential explosion in gangs. And gangs are not there for community service. Gangs are there. They become as mercenary as the people on Wall Street. And I think you're going to see the people on Wall Street who have used and abused their power. And I see that the consequences of creating massive conditions of poverty is going to see crime go 5,000 or 6,000 times higher than what it is in the next 2 or 3 years. Your thoughts, please.
I agree with you. In terms of the green zone concept, it's quite interesting. We already have one, in a sense, in terms of Detroit. Detroit has 700,000 people. It's a blighted city. It owes $18 billion in back tax money. They have 8 ambulances in the civilian ambulance corps. You can't buy fresh fruit in Detroit. okay, the perimeter suburbs, Grosse Pointe, etc., are upper middle class and upper class and living in the lap of luxury. So you already have a green zone, and Detroit is known on a tourist circuit as being a ruin. People come from Europe to look at the ruins of Detroit. Gang activity, I agree with you, will increase, and it's gangs have their own mentality, and they're interested in territory, money, power, and control also, and they lack a moral compass, and their center in the brain that stimulates empathy does not exist in many gang members, and it's going to get worse and worse. I happen to agree with you. A lot of it's about self-interest, branding, and image, okay? We live in a culture that's becoming more and more class-oriented, I think, and the good of the common man is dissipating, and the comprehension and understanding of what community is also disappearing.
I appreciate your insights. Where you and I are now going to go up to our studios and do an hour film for the upcoming very important documentary. 6 years in the making, but we'll premiere later this summer, The Poverty Inc., and we look forward to it. My guest, Dr. Christopher Baer. He is the author of The Wall Street Psychologist Gyroscope. His website is thewallstreetpsychologist.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an interesting email here from someone named Cleve, and he says his brother is very, very successful. And he says he and his brother had a very intense conversation about you. And his brother thinks that there has to be some kind of a gimmick with you. He says, you give too much stuff away. You spend direct time with your audience. You share things with people. You have dances, and you don't charge anybody a penny. And he said, no one that successful would ever give things away. There's got to be a catch. He says, the more famous you are, the more money you can demand. He just can't figure you out. So I'd like you to discuss this. There you go.
Well, he would have to blame my mother. All right, because when I became successful at a very young age, I went home and I just got my royalty check, and I was living in a little one-room apartment paying $56 a month on West 89th Street, and my bathtub, a tiny little bathtub that I had to kind of bend over at 6'2". I couldn't stretch my legs out, and then there was one of those little shower hoses that I had to pour, you know, the water on from my head, hold the shower hose up, and that was in the middle of my kitchen. And when I got my royalty check, I got a Greyhound bus, and I went back to West Virginia, and I got my mom, and I took her up, and I said, Mom, I said, now this is Market Street, and this is where all the wealthy people lived in our hometown. And I said, we've always walked by on the way to church. We walked by these two houses. One's a colonial, and the other is kind of Gothic. And yeah, they're beautiful. I said, well, today you pick one out because I'm going to buy it for you. She said, why? I said, because I want to. You've sacrificed so much. I don't need it. I said, well, but I want to. She said, no. She said, I have everything I need for happiness. I don't need anything more. And she said a little poem. She said, man searching and man finding and man searching again. Man searching and finding, but never knowing when. And she said, don't make the mistake that so many people make when they have some success. They take it personally. Just look at it as a gift. And if you get a gift, give a gift. It's a spiritual person that uses the gifts of life to enhance the lives of others, especially those who may not have had a gift. And you're never less by doing more for others, Gary Michael. And you're never more for doing less for other people. So which would you rather be? She said, so you take that money back to New York and you help people with it. You have an apartment. You don't need a bigger apartment. And you have what you need for happiness, right? And I said, yes. So you see, it's not money that gives us happiness. It's coming from a spiritual place. And that's what my mother told me. As a result, I took that seriously, and that's why I've never charged any of the 75,000 people I've counseled, not a penny. I've never charged them 5,000 lectures. I've never charged BAI, even though I'm allowed a $45,000 salary. I've never collected it. It's cost me $5.5 million in the 38 years because I would have gotten a salary from PFW and KPFK and BAI. I've never charged any of the 33 different specials on PBS over the last nearly 20 years. That cost me probably $3 or $4 million. And so each day I believe in giving gifts. And I don't believe that I should have a beautiful home and grounds without inviting the public to enjoy it also. It doesn't take away from me by opening my home to strangers. Because if these strangers can learn something, express something, and feel something by the gift that you give them, access and the openness, the vulnerability, then you have nothing to hide. Then there's not an artificial separation between you, someone famous or successful, and them, someone not. You're all then them. We are all one. We are all human beings. We are all imbued with the same spiritual foundation. How we manifest it is depending upon our own unique circumstances, conditioning, and will and power. So I believe that if more people who were successful appreciated the success and shared it with others instead of gloaming their ego onto everything they see and moniker themselves with an identity that hyperinflates their significance, then we would be a better world. We would not have the narcissism, the psychopathology that we see. Now we covet success because we assume it gives us power. We enjoy celebrity because we assume celebrity gives us unique insight, and it doesn't. So I don't need to buy a car because some famous golfer like Tiger Woods is endorsing it, or Michael Jordan wearing underwear that I should wear the underwear that he's paid to endorse. It's all superficial. It's all an illusion. So I go back to what my mother lived with life, and that was simplicity by design. And therefore, that's who I am. Now, yes, being the most famous nutritionist in the world, I could charge whatever I wanted. But what would that prove except that I was following the same materialistic path as everyone else? And therefore, I would have nothing that is unique to who I am. Hope that answers the question.
Sure does. Thank you.
Okay, let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Hi, Luann. Today, we're talking about employer wage theft, a movement to get money out of politics, and Bill O'Reilly's undiluted, unrepentant racism.
You're kidding.
I know.
Bill's a racist?
Surprise. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Could have fooled me.
Me too.
Utrice Lead, right now.